Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we will be diving into kind of a host of issues. We got a lot of little related issues that combined together kind of make a big theme for tonight. And that is kind of the subversion of conservatism. It kind of deals with why I don't really like identifying as a conservative. I feel like the term has lost all meaning. And the personalities that we're going to get into tonight, I think, really encapsulate that. On the thumbnail, you'll notice four people. That is Andrew Tate, Patrick Bette Davis, Ben Shapiro, and Amy Coney Barrett. So these are four people that are very big in Conservative Inc., I would say. I don't think Andrew Tate should be big in Conservative Inc., but I think people use him to elevate their own platform at times. But we'll get into that in a second. But we're going to talk about subversive forces in conservatism. We're also going to get into the Jeremy Boring, Jason Whitlock beef controversy. I think there's a lot of fascination there. And I like the fact that a Blaze personality is going after, you know, Daily Wire executives. I actually think that's a pretty positive development. And the only thing that Jeremy Boring can do is scree about anti-Semitism. And that dude is trying to struggle switching the internet today. And I have a tweet that I'll probably send out about that after this live stream is over. But until then, you know, that's kind of the quick rundown for today. Anthony, you got anything to launch with the opening statements on this controversy?
Yeah, I mean, so the Whitlock stuff has actually been rather interesting because, I mean, Jason Whitlock has always been a very introspective personality. I mean, perhaps even to a fault, but he's very open about his own past struggles. And where he goes wrong is sometimes he might project himself onto a situation. But at the same time, you've got to give a guy credit for being willing to acknowledge his faults. And with regards to Andrew Tate, yeah, you kind of alluded to, you know, people use him to elevate their own platforms. I mean, on Twitter or X, they generally call this engagement farming, where you might dunk on someone to elevate yourself. That's the reason a lot of people might interact with like a James Lindsay, because he has no interactions otherwise, except for people that dunk on him. So using reaction to generate your own brand is actually an effective strategy for building a platform, so to speak. So that is a viable strategy, but there is also the, I guess, alliance of convenience aspect. Is Andrew Tate an alliance of convenience for certain parties on the right in the same way that Elon Musk is often an alliance of convenience? Because again, we don't necessarily say that Elon Musk is one of us so much as he is a faction, part of a larger coalition. So that is an interesting idea that Whitlock has kind of presented that I think does warrant greater discussion. Because again, Elon Musk also kind of, you know, he gets his member out there, 13 kids, a lot of
14. I think they just announced a 14th child right after the horror of Babylon Bee.
Yeah.
Gave her and launched her paternity suit. That's the update on that story. A 14th child was announced. So and supposedly I've heard that she's carrying another child. I don't know, but that is, you know, they're apparently she filed a paternity suit. Good job, Elon. The internet tried to warn you.
Though, you know, I actually did think about writing a joke article where it's just like, you know, satire, you know, Conservative Inc. competes to hire Andrew Tate. And it'd be like Babylon Bee competing with the Daily Wire on who gets to, because I mean, they have no problem hiring e-whores. So yeah, why not hire a pimp? And then you can build a platform.
They would keep them in line.
Yeah, you can build a platform of like hot, attractive, conservative women, and all you need is a pimp to manage them. Like that's the perfect.
Not a pimp, a positively inspirational, positive, motivating person. Is that what he says?
Positive, inspirational, motivating person. But yeah.
Yeah, that's like, Andrew Tate's acronym for pimp, by the way.
I mean, there's a lot of complaints about him being a pimp and all, but you know, here they, I mean, what are they doing hiring a bunch of, you know, prostitutes,
basically. Yeah.
And what do you call yourself if you're managing a bunch of e-girls on the internet?
It's called a pimp. Joel Berry, a little bit of a pimp.
So I thought about writing that, but I didn't get.
It's kind of like the other. It's kind of like the movie The Other Guys when Will Ferrell, when Mark Wahlberg's character is telling Will Ferrell's character, "You were a pimp." That's kind of what you're saying.
Yes. So I thought about writing that. The news story kind of fell, and obviously life got in the way. But yeah, it needs to be pointed out that you know these people hire harlots all the time.
I think Axe Bonifus is right. I mean, they're never going to hire Andrew Tate, and for that reason, he has not kissed the wall. And that's why it's not the ring you have to kiss; it's the wall. So. You brought up Elon Musk, and speaking of Elon Musk, I used Grok to make the thumbnail for tonight, and I got to tell you, it maybe produced two good images where you could tell everybody was who was in the picture. And I get that I saw a comment saying AI did a poor job of Patrick Bet David, but you should have seen the other pictures. Like, it kept putting Amy Coney Barrett in more than once. I said, put these four people facing the camera because that was an issue in one of them. All in focus because that was an issue in the second best picture. And stuff like that. I even tried doing left to right, but I abandoned that parameter. Anyway, this was the best picture that Grok produced after several attempts. Just saying. And Patrick Bet David, a little hard to depict. He has a lot of different looks.
And yeah,
I mean, sometimes he looks like Indian Michael Scott. Other times he looks like he's like selling drugs or something. I don't know. Yeah, nobody special is kind of getting into what we're going to dive into. We need to recognize Andrew, just like Ben Shapiro, served a purpose in the beginning of this based movement. Well, I'm a little less convinced that Ben Shapiro served a purpose. I think he's always been kind of a detractor. I think you mentioned like the Groyper Wars of 2019 a lot and how that actually did a lot more to move the conservative movement and shifting the Overton window. I'm not really convinced that Ben Shapiro did shift the Overton window. I think he just kind of did the college campus grift.
Yeah, I mean,
that's kind of my take on that. Dinesh D'Souza did that. William F. Buckley, I think, did that before. You know, they're just doing the college campus grift. William F. Buckley I'm thinking of?
Because I don't actually know what issue should be credited with with moving the Overton window on, other than maybe riding a wave and maybe reacting to his audience.
Yeah, I'll get into Ben Shapiro in a second, but I think we need to dive into Andrew Tate first. I got a clip of Andrew Tate on the Patrick Bet David show. And let's talk about PBD for a second. Like, who is Patrick Bet David? I don't want to say most people, but this is a guy who made his fortune in scamming people. I just want to be very clear. Like, this is how he made money. He scammed people with whole life insurance, which whole life insurance I think is a scam in general. I just got term life insurance for, you know, because again, life insurance is really for if you die young. If you can get it when you're older, that's great too. But main purpose is when you're young, because then you can have other investments that will cover that your loved ones if, when you're older. But before you build those up, that's why it's good to have life insurance. Whole life insurance is like, yeah, just keep paying until you die. And it's like, not a good system, and it's also a huge scam. This is how Patrick Bet David made his money, and whole life insurance is very much a Venn diagram, oftentimes, not the only thing that uses this, but multi-level marketing, which is a scam that's worse than a Ponzi scheme. A Ponzi scheme, at least with Bernie Madoff, he just sat on a pile of money. He didn't really do anything with it after he like bought like a penthouse for himself and stuff like that. So the return on investment for a Ponzi scheme can be like 90%. Like, you get 90 cents on the dollar. But for a multi-level marketing scam, you're getting like 15 cents on the dollar. So we got to keep in mind, this is way worse. Multi-level marketing is you're pitching to your friends to get them all involved. But if your friends get involved, then they're going to be pitching to your mutual friends. and that limits your ability to actually make money. So multi-level marketing with whole life insurance, because whole life insurance has higher premiums because you're paying fat commissions in perpetuity for the people who have vested their time in the whole life insurance company. That is how Patrick Bet Davis made his money at PHP Agency, and he's a scammer.
And keep in mind, his YouTube channel is built based on his MLM company, because Valuetainment would host like these conferences or whatever, or PHP would host these conferences, and those videos of like, they'll hire like a speaker that would come in, they'd record him, and that would be the Valuetainment YouTube channel. That's where a lot of that stuff, a lot of his early videos, that's how he was able to get a lot of big name speakers at the time, was because he would host conferences or talks or whatever in the name of his company. And then that became the basis for the Valuetainment channel.
Funny story about the life insurance thing, because I was young at the time. This is before the age of evangelical dark web, but I went to a job interview for one of these multi-level marketing life insurance scam companies. It was called AIG, American Insurance Group. And maybe that was the company that was the insurer of this company. So, you know how like these like small cell phone companies use other people's towers. Maybe it was like that, but they were basically promising you the world. You know, you could make $100,000 selling whole life insurance to people who make $50,000 a year. It was really cringy. He said some things that were just so absolutely cringy. I almost got out and walked. Something about, now we're going to serve the people who served us, like talking about first responders and stuff. And that was just so cringy. Very much rubbed me the wrong way. And so I have some experience of being, you know, attempting to have been recruited into this. And I didn't buy into it because I've already done my hustle sales experience for shady companies. I've already had that experience. I wasn't leaving that experience to go into another scam of a career prospect. So anyway, little fun anecdote about myself that relates to Patrick Bet Davis, because it wasn't PHP that I know of, but it was something. So two scammers unite, because Andrew Tate is also someone who's a bit of a scammer. He's astroturfed himself to give himself the illusion of greater wealth than he actually has. So maybe he leases cars and says that he owns them. Maybe he, that's just one example. I think he's operated multiple social media accounts. Like part of it, he's operated several social media accounts to boost his presence and stuff like that. So, you know, where, you know, making fake accounts to boost yourself. So stuff like that. And then of course selling courses that probably don't really provide any real value, because again, he did not make his money through legitimate means, and he has not made as much money as he's purported. Like he rents the yachts, you know, and reuses the same footage.
Also, he keeps his housing down because the Romanian house was like a more industrial zone. So it wasn't like he bought like a mansion.
He didn't buy a mansion.
Something that was, I won't say run down, but he basically bought something that was cheap and turned it into something that was more pimping, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly, that's not a rich area of Romania that he lived in. It was like next to an airport, next to a graveyard. Not exactly like he goes to great efforts to give himself the appearance of wealth, but how wealthy he actually is, very much up in the air. Another thing to point out, you know, these mediocre rises typically end just as swiftly, because most people who get fast money don't know how to keep it. So with that said, let's dive into a clip that I want to discuss from the Patrick Bet David interview right here.
All of those elements that they don't like are the reason I am the force I am. If I had a perfect, easy little life, I mean, I've had it all the time from these conservatives. They're a pastor and they live in Nebraska and they married their first love and they have a white picket fence and they go to church every Sunday. Great. Good for you. Guess what? Most men in the world don't care what you say because there's no light without dark. And I have enough dark to bring the light. So you have to stop seeing me as your enemy because I don't live the same life you do. That's the reason I have the impact I have. I'm not going to apologize for being me. This once again comes down to jealousy. The pastor in Nebraska is jealous of me because I will always have more kids than him because I can bake more bread because I have more ovens. You can be mad. You can hate me for it. You can say I'm the bad guy. But my children are paid for. They're safe. Their women are paid for. Nobody's unhappy. Everybody's happy. That's the scenario that we're all in. It's my life decision. It's their life decision. And it's nothing to do with you. That's the bottom line of it. But they're jealous I have more influence than them. If any of these little pastors or any of these little conservative accounts had any actual influence over the needle or over society, they'd be in jail. Or they would have caught a case. They didn't. Trump caught a case.
So let's just give a quick fact check on him. Like, he caught cases way before he mattered. This dude has been clout chasing his entire career. Like, he was on British reality TV shows. Because there's like a whole way of getting yourself on like MTV or a lot of these reality shows. Like, you basically are an aspiring person. Like, the guy from Breaking Bad, like Aaron Paul, like he went on The Price is Right. Like, a lot of these people go on reality TV shows or even game shows because they want to be on TV. They want to get famous. They want to be an actor, and they get on these things first. So Andrew Tate's no different, and he got removed from a British reality TV because he caught a charge, not because he said anything that mattered. I think it was Big Brother. I think that's the big one they have over there.
I mean, can we just laugh at the fact that he accuses the pastors of being envious? I mean, what if it's not envy?
What if it's not envy? We have to tell other pastors that, but really, what if it's not envy?
I mean, I do find it comical. I can bake more bread because I have more ovens. I mean, again, we don't even know how many children he has.
I highly doubt they're all paid for.
I mean, again, I can take Elon Musk's word for it, but I'm not sure I can take his word for it because we don't actually have a count.
Elon Musk, women throw themselves at him to get the bread in the oven. But apparently he uses IVF. But anyway, Andrew Tate, I don't think women are doing that. I think, you know, birth control just doesn't work. That's my thought on that. And I believe Andrew Tate has something against using condoms, which, you know, as a married man, I understand. We don't need to play the Michael Scott clip on that issue, but yeah. So, I mean,
but obviously he's attacked. Like, again, if you want to talk about why people care about what Andrew Tate says versus what the pastor says. I mean, there is a legitimate criticism of like the pastors aren't saying the things that they should be saying. And then Andrew Tate comes along and says it while also saying a bunch of like other stuff. But the pastors aren't even doing like the bare minimum. I don't know if you have the clip where he's just like, you know, I say women can't drive or whatever. And Ben Shapiro, like, you know, got his panties in a wad. Well, that's, again, it is kind of like he's willing to say the things that other people won't say, similar to like a comedian being able to make the jokes about.
So here's something I've never heard Andrew Tate. I never knew Andrew Tate was someone who questioned the post-war consensus until I saw a clip of him doing that recently. Like, he's not the first person to question their post-war consensus. And that's one thing that Jason Whitlock, who we'll talk about later, he pointed out that clip. So he's not the first person who's done that. I mean, Patrick Buchanan, David Irving, he was a reputable historian, did. So Andrew Tate says it, and it's not that he's original in saying it, but he is, in some cases, reaching a different audience with the same point. I don't know if that audience has never heard that talking point before, though. So, again, I'm questioning the usefulness. I'm questioning, like, what is he actually saying that is so useful that we need him? Because,
yeah, I mean, because that entire point was just a regurgitated argument from someone else. And it was basically like he watched the Martyr Maid Tucker Carlson interview and basically just recited the talking point.
You know where your business would be without you. Imagine where it could go with more of you. Well, with Wix, you can create a website with more of your vision, your voice, your expertise. Wix gives you the freedom to truly own your brand and do it on your own, with full customization and advanced AI tools that help turn your ideas into reality. Scale up without being held back by cookie-cutter solutions and grow your business into your online brand. Because without you, your business is just business as usual. Take control. Go to Wix.com.
The Quarter Pounder with Cheese had many great things. Maple-flavored griddle cakes isn't one of them. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free? TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.
So I'm not really convinced that, you know, his arguments are original. You don't think his arguments are original. Maybe some of the Manosphere stuff is. I don't know how much of that stuff is. You can probably comment better on that.
I don't know how much of it I would say is original, because a lot of people will say, well, Kevin Samuels said it first. And Kevin Samuels, for those that don't know, has been dead for a couple of years now. But he was, like, you know, in the early 2000s, like, that was his ascendancy. So he is, like, an OG of the space. Then you have, I mean, obviously there's like Rollo Tomasi. There's trying to think who else is like big into pickup artist type people. I mean, they've been around for years. I mean, even like Seinfeld has several episodes that are basically just pickup artist stuff. I mean, Always Sunny had the dentist system back in like the 2000s as well. So a lot of the stuff has been known and even like prominently
I Met Your Mother did a lot of that as well. Like, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if they invented it, but the whole hot crazy scale, I thought, you know, How I Met Your Mother was the show that invented that.
I don't know. I mean, but yeah, a lot of like the Manosphere red pill talking points have actually been around. It's just that with the advent of dating apps and I guess the globalization of the dating market, and obviously like women think they're like prizes because like a bunch of people will like their thirst traps on Instagram. So when you combine like the age of technology and social media, that just exasperates the, like, every talking point that was mainly a comedy in like Hollywood portrayals. And now it made it normative. So you went from comedy to tragedy in a matter of a decade.
Yeah.
And Andrew Tate is just in the tragic phase of where we're at as a culture. And the church still does not want to acknowledge that it is as bad as people have been saying is for years, and they won't actually, you know, blame the women or acknowledge that the guys actually have a much harder time doing basic life things like getting married than their prior generations.
I will say, as far as, you know, obesity is the biggest thing in the church keeping women from getting married. I wouldn't know how to phrase it for men, though. That's not, I don't think obesity is their biggest challenge. Like, I'm just saying, like, you know, cute girls in the church, they kind of get scarfed up, in my observation. So I'll just leave my bad puns or good puns at that. So with that, because you point out a good problem or a big problem that's going on. We've talked about this multiple times, like the actual influence of Andrew Tate. Is he, you know, we've talked about whether he's seen as an influencer or is he just seen as a cartoon character, like George Costanza is kind of the a reference point, because we don't have a water cooler TV. We don't have we don't have universally watched sitcoms. So someone like Andrew Tate, I think his content steps into that ring to replace what previous generations had as like sitcoms and stuff like that. That's one theory behind the appeal of Andrew Tate, because at the end of the day, he's a character more than he is an actual person. He said things along the lines of, you know, he would rather have a hot, you know, his words, you know, with penis versus a ugly girl without a without that, you know what I'm saying? So he's definitely not super straight, if you know what I'm saying. But that's also part of his caricature. So it's difficult to discern. I don't know if you wanted to comment further on his influence or whether your perspectives on that have changed.
I mean, again, there is also the whole court gesture. I don't say character, but that court gesture role where the comedian can say things that other people can't and kind of get away with it because they're thought of as a joke. That's always been a thing. So, you know, I mean, even in Roman times, they had like Saturnalia where, you know, like a peasant would be declared like emperor for a day. And, you know, you need those kinds of like pressure release valves in comedy that kind of, I guess, again, release the pressure, social pressure, and release things from blowing up and destabilizing. So in that sense, he is kind of, again, no different than what comedians should have been doing. I mean, Patrice O'Neill's another name that we could throw in. As far as like, you know, OG Manosphere, like talk, like the people that gave those OG talking points.
You know, what's interesting is like, yeah, you know, you bring up the comedy aspect, or maybe I did, but it's interesting that I've seen like the discourse on the right about, you know, Shane Gillis. Like there's the Shane Gillis discourse because he was just on SNL, and I actually thought, you know, those sketches weren't bad. Like, give him some credit. I like the race one, whether. Which isn't like the first time they've done that, but it's, you know, keeping score between, you know, this crime was done by a white person, this crime was done by a black person. The black people and the white people in the newsroom are like competing and trying to, and they're just reading the headline and they didn't know which race did it. So it's pretty funny because it's kind of like, you know, that is how crime often works. Like a dog attacked, you know, it's a pit bull, right? So they're doing the same thing. So I thought that was good. Shane Gillis was good in that. But it's interesting. CJ Engel said, no, he's not that good. You had a pretty interesting take on that.
Yeah. I kind of said he fills that role of like the Seth Rogen. I mean, obviously Seth Rogen was more weed and Shane Gillis is more alcohol, but he kind of fills this role. Maybe Danny McBride might be another actor that's more comparable, but he kind of just, I mean, hick lib or like, you know, very libertarian-esque, you know, but husky. So, I mean, he fills that role of like comedy. So it's not like it's the same way that Snoop Dogg is basically just Ice Cube several years later. I mean, there's always going to be some like gangster rapper that's like legitimized in the culture. And, you know, several years ago, it used to be Snoop Dogg. Now Ice Cube. Now it's Snoop Dogg and Snoop Dogg's everywhere. So there is certain elements that rise and fall in the culture.
Well, but you're saying that the people rise and fall, but the elements stay the same. Is kind of what you're saying.
You're just changing out the parts.
Yeah, because Seth Rogen was good for like two movies. 40-Year-Old Virgin, which I don't know if that's Kevin Hart's first movie, but it's like early Kevin Hart. He's in a pretty funny scene in that movie. And then Superbad, I guess. He's a cop in Superbad. Anyway, let's catch up on some chat before we kind of tie in the Ben Shapiro comparison. So the Big Red Snake says, great minds think alike. The lefties and neocons have to try to subvert the right again. Pretty obvious with this and third wayism being pushed. They want to defang us all. Very good connection between the third wayism that we talked about on Wednesday's video with Gavin Ortland, which that video took off after underperforming. I changed the title, so that maybe did it. Good connection there because, you know, no one tries to subvert the left. Like that's not a thing. The Democrats are already in such disarray at the moment. No one's actually subverting them.
I mean,
didn't subvert them.
Hard to subvert the left. Like literally all these like token black guys should just be running as Democrats. Like these base like black candidates should just be running as Democrats. And then you would subvert the left through the black vote. And maybe you could win a couple cities. You could actually make some good changes, but you know, you could actually do it.
Yeah, I think that's a better strategy than running black Republicans in
black places. Like, no, run them as Democrats.
Yeah, and then just try to subvert. Yeah. That'd be an effective strategy that, you know, is real politique, I guess.
And guess what? That's what the Democrats do in Texas. That's what the Democrats do, like, everywhere. That's what, you know, all these, like, liberals and, like, you know, gays come over to the right, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're given platforms. So, I mean, you could literally just do that in reverse.
This is a good quote. Nobody special sends in a quote from Shai Al-Sanan. If you're not willing to go too far, you'll never go far enough. A lot of quotes that are similar to that. So anyway, let's bring in the Ben Shapiro comparison. I said this statement that kind of blew up. Ben Shapiro is just as subversive as Andrew Tate. And I posted that on the Twitter sphere this morning. I woke up, chose violence, posted that. It blew up, started a lot of conversation, as I've had a lot of meetings today. So I just come back and it's like, whoa. But and if anything, I'm understating it, because I actually think, yeah, I think both are bad. Andrew Tate is a worse character. I just want to be clear about that. I'm not saying Ben Shapiro is his wife beater, pimp, and all that. They're both idolaters. Let's be clear about that vice. But as far as like vices and character flaws go, yeah, Andrew Tate is worse, but who is more subversive? And that would be Ben Shapiro.
Well, I mean, yeah, he has the weaponization of an entire like industry behind him. I mean, keep in mind, it used to be that like Daily Wire was competing with like TPUSA. So it was like Charlie Kirk versus Ben Shapiro for like that millennial conservative, like, I guess, movement. Because like the campus grift circuit was like Young American Foundation versus TPUSA, and looks like TPUSA is kind of edged out. So in some sense, you know, Charlie Kirk actually won. But obviously, I don't think his podcast is nearly as big as Shapiro.
It could have been, but maybe he might be one of the benefactors of Dan Bongino exiting the podcast. Because he is doing that, right?
I would assume.
I actually like the fact that Trump is elevating podcasters. Like, get these people into the game. Let's do it. Let's reward our people. Patron our people. So I'm a big fan of that. Of Trump hiring podcasters in the administration, because these people live and breathe politics as a profession. I'm saying they're great at it, but they're not normies, and that is useful.
But with regards to Daily Wire, it should kind of be known that they've always kind of been very containment and subversive-esque. I mean, because people will think, oh, they were funded by these like Christian Zionist people. And no, that's like the tip of the iceberg. Like, the Wilkes brothers, who were like giving the seed money for the Daily Wire, are actually like non-Trinitarian. They reject the Trinity, and they're like Messianic Jews that reject the Trinity. So the very founding like seed money and influence was very Zionist from the start.
Can you fill me in on that? How can you be Messianic Jewish and
reject that is the Trinity? That is a tendency that happens.
I know it is, but I'm a little lost on the how they fit the pieces together. Is this like, does this explain like someone like Bryson Gray? I don't know if you're familiar with
I think it. He's more impacted by like oneness Pentecostalism.
I don't think he is. I think he's just trying to, he reads the Bible but doesn't understand the Bible, and it shows. And anyway, when you try to invent theology, don't do that. Just as a general rule. So with that said,
again, they've been very subversive from the start, even with regards to their initial backers. And obviously, you know, you have Andrew Clavin, who's like very liberal theologically while affirming his gay son. Obviously, you know, Jeremy Boring is like this evangelical, like very rabid Zionist. Obviously you have Catholics, but
Can I also point out that Jeremy Boring defended gay flags on The Chosen?
Yeah, I mean, he does. I mean, yeah, there's been he has very libertarian.
Candace Owens did too, for what it's worth.
Yes, I mean, he has very libertarian leanings.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about Jeremy Boring when we talk about Jason Whitlock, kind of as a counterweight to a lot of this, because that ties into the Andrew Tate as well, but. In terms of Ben Shapiro, first of all, recently I did an article on this. I forget what month. It was after the election, but before the inauguration. So it was in that presidential elect time frame. Ben Shapiro was opposing mass deportations and basically saying we can't just send them all back. we're going to have to determine who can stay and who doesn't stay. It's like, no. There's a word for that. It's called amnesty. You're granting amnesty to people. If you're not deporting these people, you're giving them amnesty. Even if it's not official, a deliberate decision not to deport someone here illegally is amnesty. There's just no other way around that. So he did that recently. So again, not on our side, but we can dial back the clock to 2020. Ben Shapiro was absolutely useless. He had a large platform then that really could have tipped the balance of, like, I think Branch Davidianism could have been defeated a lot sooner if Ben Shapiro was on our side.
Yeah,
but he was not. He did not call for Fauci to be fired until, I believe, December of 2020. It would have
been December. And that was after other hosts at the Daily Wire had.
Because his wife is a doctor?
Well, I honestly think part of it is because, you know, if his talking points mirror a foreign country's talking points. You know, one foreign country was very pro-vaccine, very pro-lockdown, very pro-mask. And Ben Shapiro's talking points on the vaccine particularly mirrored said certain country in the Middle East.
So, and then certain jabs come out. He hardcore promoted them. Jeremy Boring hardcore promoted them. Let me kind of talk so I don't get us in trouble here. Because Jeremy Boring said if he was dictator or something, he would mandate it. Okay, so he did say that.
He said that in his video in which he was opposing the Biden administration mandate. He literally is trying to announce and gain clout for starting a lawsuit. And he's just like, I mean, if I were a dictator, I would mandate it. Like, this is supposed to be like a serious, like, legal announcement, and then you're putting that comment in there.
So here's the thing. It was pretty foreseeable that this jab would not work. That was very foreseeable because, you know, there's a lot of things that don't work, especially things that are rushed. But who could have foreseen the harm that it would have caused? And did cause, and how many people in Ben Shapiro's audience? It was a massive audience at the time. He was like the number one podcast on the right at the time that I know of. How many people in that audience were hurt by that? That's a good question.
The Shapiro and Daily Wire in general. I mean, I think
so.
Their audience is generally to the right of them. So yeah. I think a lot of their audience is kind of like pulling them to the right. So that's why they kind of like chameleon.
Right. But again, how many people has Ben Shapiro led to harming themselves via his influence versus Andrew Tate has directly harmed? Just saying. Not equating the two, but it is worth asking. If we want to defend people's character or assess people's character, he did promote a product that was dangerous. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. He did promote the lockdowns, masking, and all that, essentially by giving Fauci credence.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I mean, I don't think...
And the Daily Wire didn't oppose lockdowns in California. They just moved, but they didn't, like, defy any lockdowns or anything like that.
I mean, if anything, a lot of Andrew Tate's audience aren't necessarily mirroring his prescriptive behaviors.
I think there's two conservative media things that did not do work from home during COVID. Steven Crowder, credit where credit is due. His show, basically, he destroyed the quality of his show by doing a daily show, but he did not. He did continue to work in the studio, and that was good. And then Steve Dace continued to work in the studio. So I don't know many other examples of major podcasters that continue to work in-house. So everyone else kind of bought into it. And yeah, good to point out, because we're going to dial the clock back a little bit further. Ben donating to HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, is also responsible for murders. That's a good point. This is one of the biggest open borders profiteers out there, and they facilitate the invasion at the southern border. I mean, we mostly cover the supposedly Christian organizations that do that. But yeah, the Jewish organization has been doing that at a much larger scale in multiple countries. And yeah, Ben Shapiro supported them. Shocker. And it's a shocker that he supported them in the past and doesn't support mass deportations now. So let's dial back the clock to 2018. Breyer has resigned or whatever. He's promised his resignation. No, it's not Breyer. It's Kennedy has announced his resignation from the Supreme Court. And Brett Kavanaugh is chosen as a replacement, right?
Yep.
Ben Shapiro is one of the several people, and as early as 2018, he was promoting Amy Coney Barrett for the Supreme Court. And maybe he did it early. Sorry, maybe I should say as late as 2018 he began doing that. And maybe he was doing it earlier, but this dude was promoting Amy Coney Barrett to be on the Supreme Court. And here's what I got to say on that. First of all, actually, let's talk about Brett Kavanaugh for a second, because credit where credit is due. Brett Kavanaugh did not have such lofty expectations, but he stood his ground against the Me Too movement, which is more than what many pastors have done. If we want to, I'm not trying to sound like Andrew Tate's comparison, because I think pastors have been, had more positive influence than him, but Brett Kavanaugh stood his ground against the Me Too movement, which, let me just say, Southern Baptist messengers there. Southern Baptist messengers love the Me Too movement. Brett Kavanaugh stood his ground. Had some balls there. I appreciate that. And
he actually gave that fiery speech on the floor in defense of himself. Obviously they were trying to railroad him, and it was quite despicable. And again, people ask, why did she do it? Well, she's been, Christina Blasey Ford has been like heralded on the left since then. She's part of their patronage network. Even though it didn't work for them, they've still rewarded her handsomely.
Interesting, because I haven't kept up with her. So, but
I mean, she makes a couple rounds here.
Let me just give some praise upon Brett Kavanaugh. He is the third best justice on the Supreme Court. Distant third, but he's Trump's best SCOTUS pick, that I would say. Shouldn't be the case. But when you have the female Catholic and the Episcopalian with a lesbian priest.
Is he really?
Yeah, in Colorado, yeah. Like, yeah, Gorsuch should have never been nominated to the Supreme Court. Didn't know that at the time. And I also think Amy Coney Barrett should have never been nominated. Now, perspective, she was replacing Ginsburg. So you replaced the Jewish lady on the Supreme Court with a liberal Catholic lady. Move to the right.
Well, the problem is you replaced a woman with a woman because she had to be a woman.
Yeah, it was a diversity hire.
Yeah. I mean, again, half the court might be considered diversity hire, as in like every woman and Clarence Thomas. So that'd be, what, five? Well,
definitely, yeah. But Clarence Thomas at least has the acumen.
Yes. And also, if you described his lifestyle, he would be a white man.
But not to disparage Clarence Thomas, but he was put in to replace Thurgood Marshall, the first black Supreme Court justice, who was a terrible justice.
Yes.
So these kind of politics have existed for a while in the Supreme Court.
I mean, Reagan chose O'Connor because she was a woman, specifically because she wanted to nominate the first woman.
And look how
that was bad. I mean, yeah. Kennedy, you can kind of understand because of the whole Robert Borking, which, might have been like Joe Biden's like most craftiest moment in politics.
It's hard to say because he's definitely had some craft.
He was kind of forced to go with Kennedy, who basically wrote the New York abortion case.
Let me answer this question. Why is Kavanaugh better than Gorsuch? The transvestite issue. So
yeah,
transgenderism, Gorsuch is a traitor.
He read that into the Civil Rights Act. So basically, like how Congress talks about the Equality Act, well, Gorsuch basically gave you the Equality Act from the Supreme Court. He legislated that from the bench.
There's other examples, but I can't recall them all in my head. But yeah, the transgenderism issue Gorsuch is weak on because he's an Episcopalian. So it was very foreseeable, in my opinion. And Amy Coney Barrett does not have the stomach for politics. I've seen reports that she, you know, when there was like a gun found or a gunman, someone trying to harm a Supreme Court justice, I believe it was Brett Kavanaugh. She's apparently like afraid in considering resigning from the Supreme Court, which is a natural female instinct, not discounting that. But she's on the Supreme Court. And in order to be on the Supreme Court, you are a politician. You need to have the stomach for politics. Donald Trump does, and he said, fight, fight, fight. Just saying. Again, not for everyone. It's a vocation. It's politics. Not for everyone. Being a pastor, not for everyone. Kevin DeYoung, just throwing that out there. He wrote an article recently, which I have yet to respond to or read in its entirety, but it's very ironic that he wrote that. So Ben Shapiro is one of the leading voices to convince normies that Amy Coney Barrett should be on the Supreme Court. 2020 rolls around, Ginsburg dies. Trump feels that he has to replace her with a woman. So who is the woman that the normie cons want? Amy Coney Barrett, even though earlier that year she was a COVID Nazi. So she was not a good judge in 2020. Her record was not that good. It was great compared to Ginsburg, but it was not, like, there were some concerns. There were some red flags. And I thought there's an evangelical lady that I thought was a much better pick. I forget what her name was.
Was that the Florida judge?
I don't know. I don't know where she was from, but yeah, she would have been a much better pick. And nope, we don't put evangelicals on the Supreme Court. So, because even an evangelical girl boss is still probably going to be more based than a Catholic girl boss, and certainly more based than a Jewish girl boss. Just saying.
Well, and, you know, not to harp on, you know, Stephen Wolf's dispute with, like, James White and Jeff Durbin over the whole use of worldview as a very reductionistic and ideological way to dismiss, I guess, pursuing certain vocations and intellectual traditions. But yeah, that's kind of part of it. Why aren't there, you know, more, you know, high profile Protestants in a lot of spaces? And maybe it's because there's a kind of an anti-scholastic impulse within a lot of Protestant Christianity. And the Catholics don't necessarily have that. And obviously a lot of the mainline denominations went liberal long ago. And so a lot of that, I won't say like the fundamentalists, but like the fundamentalists from 100 years ago, fundamentalists, you know, they didn't have the scholastic.
I'm told they would be woke
desires
by today's standards by Gavin Orland.
Yeah. But yeah, when Stephen Wolf talks about like the whole worldview discussion, there is a sense where, you know, Protestants should be more into intellectual and scholastic, I guess, pursuits. So, you know, we should be helping our children become doctors, become lawyers, become engineers and pilots.
Pursue high income careers or high status. Now, I just say start businesses, because there's a lot of ways that's probably, I don't want to say easier, because in the last week, I've probably worked more than I have in a very long time. Like, even during the busy times at my job, I wouldn't start. In my past job, I would not start working until like noon. Okay, that's a little bit of an exact. Maybe sometimes 1 o'clock, I wouldn't start working, because there was not that much work, or the work that I could do sooner. You know, I could do 8 hours of work and I could do other people's 8 hours in about 3.5 hours. So yeah, but now I'm like working very hard because I actually own the company. And I think in order to get wealth, like, you need equity and not the woke kind. I like, you know, ownership. So that's my view. And that's, you know, that's true with real estate. You're owning assets. Most people who are millionaires have real estate. So in one case, yeah, when it comes to the high status argument that you recommend, you're talking about, you're alluding to, the thing that we're kind of leaving out, I think, is the equity portion, because people who own businesses have that. people with high incomes don't necessarily have that. People with high incomes, these Christians that we should be encouraging in high income solutions, they need to transfer that high income into equity in something. So yeah, work harder, not smarter, or work smarter, not harder. So that's kind of my view on that. It kind of meshes our two points together. So anyway, my point is that, Amy Coney Barrett was subversive on the Supreme Court. She has not been a good justice outside of the Dobbs decision. She has been horrendous. She has sided with the liberals probably more times than not. At least on any significant SCOTUS ruling I can recall, she has sided with the liberals.
Now, I know with the most recent where Barrett sided with the liberals and Roberts did too on the whole, on the question of whether, the injunction is valid. They were mainly asking for clarification on the injunction itself or the ruling against Trump itself. So it's like, okay, the judge that issued the ruling actually has to make a determination or make a rule. It can't just like blanket say you can't do this. Like there has to be more clarification versus the minority or the dissent on that case basically was just like, yeah, this is completely Article 2 purview. And you're out for lunch. You don't even have a ruling. So they wanted to toss the case because they didn't even have like a specific ruling. And the majority decided that you needed something. You need to come back with clarification on what exactly your ruling is.
Yeah, I mean,
so it is more of a technicality than on the surface, but at the same time, it should have been dismissed with prejudice.
Yeah, and that's what the dissenting opinion basically said. The dissenting opinion's like, yeah, majority of the court believes that a federal district judge who does not have the jurisdiction on this issue can determine that we can spend and lose $2 billion. And the majority of the court believes that, and I'm stunned, is how that first paragraph ends with those two words. And it was it seemed very informal. But nonetheless, thank you in the chat for saying hit the like button.
Nothing is more informal than Ketanji Jackson Brown, who did the whole. Yeah. She had something where she just repeated a phrase in a ruling. It was histrionic, let's just say.
Thank you for saying hit the like button, because I believe that helps with live streams. I don't think it helps with videos much. Videos, new subscribers are what boosts videos. And that is, I can show you chart after chart. That is what does it, not likes or comments. But on live streams, I think likes has a lot more impact on the live streams algorithm. So please get that up. Subscribe if you are new. Any more on the, because I think Ben Shapiro, he promoted that subversion. I think he's largely been a factor in gatekeeping the right from more conservative voices. He has, I don't want to say he's fallen off, but I feel like he's a lot less relevant than he used to be.
Yeah, I mean, he's someone that has a large following, but not a whole lot of influence. And keep in mind, he has to be pulled to the right, because, I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that the right is so anti-Ukraine, he would probably be shilling that war too, because that's a Zionist war. If you actually look into the details of where certain groups of people come from and, when they immigrated to the United States, where they came from, it's the same war.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. And
there's a reason that, certain groups really hate Vladimir Putin, because he's not a communist. He's, he's been around for decades at this point. So you could, what you're going to get from him. So there's a huge hostility towards him that did not exist with like a Boris Yeltsin.
I think part of it is we look at a ruler who does something for the benefit of their people and their national interest with suspicion. You're not supposed to do that. We have a post-World War order here that you're not supposed to nation build. You're building up a third world country with democracy.
Even though he said that you can't harvest Russia for parts, you can't have a bunch of international corporations come in and harvest Russia for parts. That's why we hate Vladimir Putin. And then if you look at what happened in the Middle East, all this talk, I mean, Steve Dace did it today or maybe yesterday, But, you know, if it wasn't for like one group of people in the Middle East, or I would prefer one group of people in the Middle East over Islam, which would then encroach upon the West. Well, if you actually look at what was happening in the Middle East, you know, secular nationalism was kind of a thing. We called it Baathism, or which was Saddam Hussein and Bashar al-Assad. So you had these secular nationalist figures.
That's a political party, by the way.
Yes.
That is transnational.
But you had these like secular national figures that weren't hardcore Islamist. And then when you depose them, they get replaced with hardcore Islamist. And the same thing with the Hamas versus the Yashir Al, whatever his name is.
I'll comment on that. So Iran is like, okay, 1950s, America actually knew, hey, let's put this, let's actually put a very secular, quasi-anti-Islamic monarch in charge of Iran. Let's put the Shah back in charge and basically remove the prime minister, who was kind of an emerging dictator in some ways. So yeah, let's not, that was actually a competent foreign policy move that barely worked. In 1952, when they did the coup in Iran, or maybe it was 56. I can't quite remember.
It was Eisenhower. Yasser Arafat. But yeah, I mean, yeah. But essentially, a lot of the whole radical Islam basically was created by America and Mossad. Like the CIA and Mossad created this stuff.
Now, how much of that has to do with the, like the Mujahideen and the Afghan Soviet war?
But I mean, they even like helped Hamas to subvert Arafat. So there is a sense where we created this.
We created our own villains.
Yes. And, you know, just how the West became more secular, that probably would have happened to the Middle East had we not just like infused a lot of like Wahhabism.
I think it would be pretty interesting, because I think Islam could just crater in this century, because they're not going to, how are they going to deal with materialism? They might not be equipped for that. Like, you're already seeing Arab nations. Yeah, sorry, Ali Stuckey. No, Israel's not the place in the Middle East that's the best place to visit. Probably going to be Dubai.
Yeah, I mean, you could be like
UAE. Let's be real. It's like the Las Vegas of Europe.
Las
Vegas of the Middle East.
If you're
fly Emirates.
Yeah, if you're like a hot woman in like Europe, you can basically have like the good life in Dubai.
But you might have to deal with some crap. I mean, if the internet rumors are true, you might have to deal with some crap. So I think the last thing I want to talk about was the, going back to Andrew Tate, I want to talk about the Jeremy Boring, Jason Whitlock beef. And I thought it was pretty interesting that Jeremy Boring's just blatantly misrepresenting Jason Whitlock. Like, he's accusing him of praising, Andrew Tate, even though Jason Whitlock has done, as far as I know in conservative media, he's probably done the most, I don't want to say apologetics, but maybe polemic. He's done like the most polemic work against Andrew Tate. Is there someone else who's done more?
He was certainly early on it.
So I'm not sure how, you know, you would conclude that he is that way.
Well, I mean, he is kind of like how I said at the beginning, he's making an introspection. Again, that is his strength and his weakness, that he thinks Andrew Tate is necessary to reach an audience. And again, we don't even know whether this audience.
Well,
this audience is, or how.
Just to clarify on that point, he's talked about people on his show believing that, and now he's come around to agree with them to some capacity. So that's, you know, partly the influence of his past contributors, because he and Royce White had a falling out, and Bryson Gray's not on the show anymore. Probably for the best.
Well, they're both kind of dumb, but
yeah.
But I mean, he is wondering whether it's a tactical necessity. And again, this is just how politics works. You know, a lot of movements that rise, you know, you have people that are on your side. And once you take power, you sometimes have to eliminate certain people. I mean, you know, what did David do with Joab? Joab got taken out eventually.
Well, Solomon took
him out. Yes, Solomon took him out. And there's a reason for that. Because sometimes you have to take some people out. You got to, you know, you got to be like Christy Noem and kill your dog sometimes.
Worst example, but yeah.
Yes. I talked about that on a thing last night. And
yeah.
It was on the mind.
So let's play this part. I'm going to listen. I listen to Jason Whitlock at 1.5 speed when I do. And whenever he talks about Caitlin Clark, I don't listen. Like, that's the number one way you can get me to not listen to his show is talk about Caitlin Clark.
In which he said that.
That's
he
was worst take. But outside of that, he has a lot of really well-balanced takes. I think he's pretty entertaining. Steve Kim is very entertaining, in my opinion. So here's...
And it does give you insight into the normie sphere.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at, like, Jason Brown, Steve Kim, you're getting a lot of the sports bro normie sphere, and that's how you can kind of sense that there's a vibe shift happening.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, let me just say, I don't listen to a whole lot of political stuff. I don't listen to a whole lot of Theo Bro content either. I'm very bad at doing the reading. Let me just say that. I am reading Andrew Torba's book, Reclaiming Reality, right? Is what it's called. I am reading that book. It is hard for me to read. It's not even like a super intellectual book, but I have a hard time reading Christian books. I just do. But anti-Christian books, I read this like it's cutting through butter, like, you know, David Platt's radical, John Hagee's In Defense of Israel. But books that are like right wing and stuff, like, I have a hard time reading those. I just do. But anyway, I like interacting. I listen to a lot of sports content at times. I listen to a lot of history content, a lot of business content, a lot of Dave Ramsey these days. He's really good for wisdom, I think. I think he has a lot of wisdom on what he says. I don't agree with him on financial management, I would say. Like, I'm someone who will use debt smartly, but, you know, as far as wisdom goes, I think he's a really good source of that. So that's kind of what I listen to on a daily basis. I, you know, try to, because I exist in this world a lot, and I try not to only exist in this world of Theo Bro niche media.
Crystal clear, Donald Trump was, in what he was saying about, hey, there was bad people on both sides and blah, blah. They know what he was really saying, but they smeared him anyway. And that hoax, the Charlottesville hoax, has been going on and on and on and on. Jeremy Boring just did it to me. Exact same thing. His tweet might as well have read, Jason Whitlock claims the Tate brothers are very fine people. And so I responded. Jeremy knows that's not remotely what, this is what I put on Twitter, not remotely what I'm arguing in this clip or at any time about Andrew Tate. I've been quite critical of Tate for a long time. Tristan Tate blocked me on this app, X, more than a year ago. You won't find me anywhere arguing Christians need to embrace Andrew Tate. Yesterday, I offered an analysis on why some conservatives choose to defend Andrew Tate. I called him a force for evil and a pimp. I argued that his appeal among some conservatives is his defense of white culture and nationalism. Jeremy's lying here out of desperation. Journalists analyze and explain things to their audience. Why Tate has appeal with some conservatives and young American men is worthy of exploration. In order to believe Jeremy's lie, you have to ignore multiple shows, including yesterday's, where I spell out my problems with Tate. Jeremy, stop lying. It's a bad look for Ben Shapiro. He's capable of defending himself without resorting to lies. The Derek Chauvin pardon suggestion is a dumb idea. I'm not going to apologize for pointing out its stupidity. Jeremy, return to collecting marketing emails from the Chauvin site. You don't have the necessary integrity to win a debate with me.
Let me just comment on that, because that's another topic that I wanted to bring up, was the Ben Shapiro trying to use the Derek Chauvin thing to, and some people are calling it a publicity stunt.
I mean, in many ways it is, because it's like, I'm going to take this far right position to like win some people back. And so it does maybe suggest an Overton window shift, especially on the Chauvin stuff.
Yeah, so I actually liked Jason Whitlock's perspective on that. He talked about how, well, obviously a federal pardon doesn't get him out of prison, so there is a sense that it's a virtue signal. I've seen other analysis that points out that Derek Chauvin's federal appeal would then be mooted, which could actually hurt his ability to appeal his state ruling. So pardoning him might actually hurt his legal standing, because he's currently arguing something about having ineffectual counsel that withheld information that would have changed his plea decision at the federal level. So he's making an argument about ineffectual counsel, which his defense attorney sucked.
And just so people know, he was convicted on the state and then he pled on the feds. So they did double jeopardy him, which, I mean, the courts would say it's not double jeopardy, but at the in reality it is, because you basically are using two courts to adjudicate the same incident. But there is a federal, he does have a federal sentence against him, but I think he's serving time in the state prison still.
No, it's federal prison.
He's in the federal prison?
Right. So all pardoning him would do is send him to the state prison, which Jason Whitlock, I'm gonna give deference to his experience with knowing the ins and outs of prisons, because he says that the state prison would actually put him more in danger. He's already been attacked in the federal prison before, so for him to be sent to the state prison could endanger his life. So you're not doing him many favors. You shouldn't launch a campaign to pardon him without his permission. I think that's fair to say. At least let him ask for a pardon. At least get his assent to your actions before you create an email list.
Which, again, he's basically just saying, yeah, you're just doing the stunt to get an email list so that then you can sell Daily Wire to people. Which I like that that he's just saying this is just a shrewd business decision. You're basically, you know, monetizing the guy's prison sentence for your own personal gain. And yeah, it actually does hurt Trump at this point, because I mean, Trump needs to stay focused on the ball, and there's no upside to pardoning this guy. I mean, it's not like you can just do it on day one where you stack it in with the blitzkrieg of pardons on the J6ers. It's we're like all but what, six or eight were pardoned, and those six to eight were like commuted, I think.
So
yeah, it doesn't actually do Trump any favors politically. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, you might have a counter signal against the civil rights regime, but at the same time, it is probably just a shrewd decision to just, I'm going to take a bold stand, stake out some territory to maybe reclaim some relevance on the personal front.
Yeah, there's a political calculation that a president being responsible has to make. It's part of the job. You are a politician. You have to make political calculations. And is this a distraction from his overall mission? And it doesn't actually help Derek Chauvin at all to go to state prison. Now, if you wanted to be really bold, you could release him from federal prison while he has an active state conviction and sentence. If you wanted to be really bold, you could just release him from federal prison and let the extradition begin.
I mean, Trump literally just played Vladimir Zelensky last week. And if you want to talk about political calculations that may or may not make sense, I mean, J.D. Vance sticking up for big balls on the Doge squad. Like, that's not a calculation that necessarily makes sense. Like, there's no...
But it was helpful.
Well, yeah, I'll get there. But there's no, like, immediate upside on, like, J.D. Vance's political future that comes from standing up for big balls. So the fact that he did does represent a genuine position or conviction that J.D. Vance has. Because again, a shrewd political calculator that's like a chameleon and just like blending in. If, like, if you think J.D. Vance is just an op, like an op doesn't do that, because there's no upside to standing up for big balls. So there's not really any upside for standing up for Chauvin at this juncture, especially with, you know, his appeals in the progress. Obviously, he still has the state conviction to deal with. So, I mean, the work kind of being astroturfed by Ben Shapiro doesn't really make sense.
Jeff says the Brunswick 3 that should also be part of
that. Georgia, I think, right? Who were arresting who were trying to do a citizen's arrest, and they kind of got convicted because
they got carried away. Right. I'm not as convinced by their innocence.
I mean, it's kind
of, and I'm not wholly opposed to vigilantism as a concept. You know, we like Batman around here. Superman's cool too at sometimes.
I mean, it's kind of the case of, okay, the guy didn't commit a crime, but at the same time, he might have been casing the place. And maybe he didn't see anything that was worth stealing, so he didn't steal anything. So when they were catching, or when they got to him, then, so, I mean, there's a lot of just
A lot of bad decisions that led to that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not really convinced that they were innocent because, you know, and this is not really a criminal discussion. I'm just saying they committed actions intentionally that led to bad things happening. And here's another thing about trespassing. I'm pretty sure trespassing doesn't actually get convicted unless you were in the Capitol.
Well, I mean, they're basically saying he was there to rob a construction site.
Right, but doing a citizen's arrest on a trespass, or maybe a burgle that's ended, was not a wise decision. So,
But for those in the comments,
not on that priority.
I mean, for those in the comments saying pardon them out of spite, that's my attitude towards Chauvin. And so, I mean, again, I'm fine with
the idea. But pardon him if he doesn't want it. If it might hurt him.
I'm fine with pardoning people out of spite to other groups of, let's say, undesirables.
Now, I like the fact that someone like Jenna Ellis sold out on Trump and then, you know, negatively impacted her career, reputation, and all that other stuff. And then the case was dropped against Trump that she would have had to testify against him for. That is, as the Joker would say, getting what you deserve. So that's not actually how he said it, though. But we're going to keep it a little bit more PG around here. Continuing on with the Jason Whitlock clip.
That site, they're collecting emails so they can try to bait people into subscribing to the Daily Wire. This whole thing, at this point, without Jeremy giving me some sort of explanation that I kept asking for, I'm going to reach the conclusion that it's just a marketing ploy, that it's a publicity stunt, that it's some sort of appeal to hard right conservatives to say, hey, I know that you guys are following Candace Owens and she's having a lot of success, but hey, we hate George Floyd too, and we want Derek Chauvin sprung from jail. Come join the Daily Wire. That's the only, without someone offering me an explanation, that's all I can conclude. Because all these attacks on me and all this misinformation, all this distortion, this smear of my position, that's a leftist tactic. That's a tactic that someone vaccine boosted, who wants to be a Hollywood director, who's a closeted leftist, that's the kind of attack they would make. They would take something that mountains, I would say, I've got hours of content taking a major dump on Andrew Tate, including what I said yesterday. Only a liar would suggest that Christians need to embrace Andrew Tate. Find me saying that anywhere. Hey, man, some of these people ain't real about this life. They call themselves the God King. They market themselves as the God King. And when you start thinking you're the God King and marketing, oh, I'm just joking, it's just a joke, you start thinking you're everyone's God and that I don't have a right to ask questions or to have my point of view or to express what I believe. You're the God King. You get to decide who's good and who's bad. No one gets to question dumb ideas that you suggest because you're the God King. And you know how I know that these little silly marketing nicknames have impact? And again, this is what these people don't get about me. The first person I always evaluate is myself. And I'm honest about it and I'm critical of myself. You know how I know these little silly nicknames about how they have an impact? Because I used to run around and call myself Big Sexy. And trying to live up to that.
Okay, can we just comment on that for a second?
I completely believe that, especially when all the stories about going to the strip clubs and all that. I can totally picture. And he was bigger back in the day. I mean, you got to give the guy some credit. He's lost some good weight, and he built like a home gym. He spent probably thousands on that. So I mean, whatever he's doing does seem like it's working.
I mean, you just got to laugh at that. You know, we got to take a moment and just laugh at Big Sexy. Oh, man, the 2000s were wild.
That name is how you get obese and you become a sexual degenerate. So when you run around calling yourself the God King, you start acting like you're God and you're better than everyone else. And no one has a right to disagree with you. Closeted leftist. Leftists want to be God. They think they're their own God. That's why they sit there, God will give them batting balls, and they'll say, nope, let's cut it off. I want to be a woman. God will give them a vagina, and they'll say, nope, I want to be a man. I want to enter the workforce. I don't want to be a mother. I want to be a feminist. I want to usurp the patriarchy. They start thinking that what they feel is more important than what God has commanded. Closeted leftist, vaxxed and boosted, wants to be in Hollywood, rubbing elbows with the Hollywood elite. Been cast off to Nashville, where he's trying to work his way back to Hollywood. Don't miss a second of Fearless.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to what he said there. Because one of the comments that I left on Jeremy Boring is like, don't you have bad movies to make or talk about making? Because at the end of the day, he's a lot of all talk and no walk on a lot of the movie promises.
Yeah,
I mean, be real about that. Lady Ballers look bad.
Always a good reminder that a lot of these people they failed in Hollywood, and then they get platforms on Con Inc. You know, Matt Walsh, I think, wanted to be and Knowles, I think, wanted to be actors. I think Jeremy Boring wanted to be a producer, and he got Jeremy Boring made his bones being like the Hollywood Conservative Actors Guild, I guess, or whatever club that they had. He kind of took it over and then ran it into the ground. Mark Dice has done some coverage on that. So that's where I kind of learned it. But yeah, that's where Jeremy Boring was. And then he kind of got roped into Daily Wire. But.
Well, this is an executive there.
Yeah. And then.
Or even better, a God King.
So yeah, they basically wanted to make movies and be Hollywood actors. Even Brett Cooper. Yeah.
They promised Snow White.
Not a very successful actress. And then, but very successful in the podcast scene.
Yeah, and maybe that's credit to her talent. But yeah, they were going to make a Snow White movie in response to Disney with her as the star, and that went nowhere. And instead, there's just a rumored Pendragon that may or may not come out, which the rumors about the Daily Wire were that this is driving them into some money troubles, that Jeremy Boring's personal pet projects are consuming a lot of cash. And let's be real, like, okay, they didn't make the Run Fight movie or whatever that was, Run Hide Fight.
No, they didn't make that distro movie.
So we're not going to count that one. But they did make the Gina Carano movie, which was pretty liberal and pretty subversive. I think Jason Whitlock took a dump on that. I could be wrong. But Lady Ballers, that looked like trash. That looked like, let's just have our buddies act in a movie. And comedy is really, you know, comedy is super easy, right? A lot of people who can't act can be in comedy movies.
What? And they probably think they're really funny guys, too.
I know. But here's the thing. Matt Walsh, I think, is funny in a deadpan sort of way. But, you know, he wasn't the star of that movie. But they had two people that were the stars of that movie. They didn't, or maybe four people that were stars of the movie. And it looked like this was a movie that you need to improvise lines in order to be funny.
Well, keep in mind, they also made a near two hour runtime on like what is really a 90 minute comedy at best. But at the same time, what it really is just an SNL sketch. That's
too long.
Yeah.
And a lot of SNL sketches that get turned into movies really suck. I'm not a fan of Austin Powers. There's my another controversial take. That's just one example. I know there's other. Coneheads is terrible. There we go. Yeah, that's not. Yeah, that's an SNL sketch.
So, like, John Doyle has talked about this a lot, where like conservatives suck at art because they're very smug and arrogant, and that's what Lady Ballers is. It's arrogance. It's smugness. It's we're better than you, and except it's, you know, made into a movie, and it's not, you know, art to make art. Or art to be creative, or art as a form of expression. It is just, we're making art to feel good about ourselves. I mean, that's not what Tolkien did.
Austin Powers wasn't an SNL sketch? Really? I know, like, the whole cast is SNL, so maybe I'm thinking, like, movies where they made SNL were basically an extension of SNL for these people. What was it, the MacGruber movie that they made, like, a decade and a half ago? Like, yeah, I believe that was an SNL sketch.
I thought that was a show, but I could be wrong.
No, MacGyver's a show. This was a parody of that. So, just a neocon version of an Adam Sandler movie is like, yeah, that's basically what they did. Although I would say more like Dodgeball would be a comparison. Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller. So,
Or bench warmers.
But. Let's also not leave out Mr. Burcham, which that was a show. Like, maybe they should hire me because I don't think I can sell out, and I don't think they'll pay me more than what I'm going to make now. But that was a show that if they just tweaked the concept, they would have had something. But instead, they wanted to have the woodshop teacher be the normie con, I don't want to say base, because woe to those who call the cringe base and the base cringe, redeem Zoomer. That's a reference to something. But if they just tweaked the concept, they would have had something funny. Much funnier than, I think it was Dave Rubin's animated show, which they did the new norm or whatever, which they tried to launch on Twitter. They tried to launch a sitcom on Twitter based on Archie Bunker, and that was just, was even worse. Like, there was no, I could not fix that content. Like, not a miracle worker.
And the thing is, they in that show in particular, again, it's smug, it's arrogant, but at the same time, they imagine themselves as losers.
Yeah, that's the most stunning part of that. Which is why if they made the concept ironic from the beginning, it wouldn't be such a depressing power fantasy. And that's what I wrote about at the time, was that they're making power fantasies. Which, sure, power fantasies, there's a place for that. I'm not going to say that power fantasies should never be a thing, because that's what superhero, right, comic books often are. That's what a lot of sports movies are. They're power fantasies in some degree. But why are you imagining yourself in your own power fantasy as a loser? It's just, that just makes no sense. And that's the Daily Wire's view of comedy. Makes no sense. So I'll do a last call for questions, because that's kind of all I got. We've kind of talked a lot about the subversion of conservatism, and I think the latest beef in Con Inc. I saw a question. Let's say using debt smartly. Yeah, I mean, like, for instance, not paying off your mortgage when you have a low interest rate, because you would get a higher return on investment if you invested that same money that you would use to pay off a mortgage.
Well, I mean, just imagine how Donald Trump made a lot of his money, was he would make other people take the risk that he would himself, instead of him taking the risk on the real estate transaction, he has his other people, his clients, take the risk. And that's how he's able to make it rich. I mean, Elon Musk did the same
thing. Elon Musk has a lot of debt.
Yeah, but I mean, he, in many ways, he does make other people take the risk. Oh, like, sure. Him being able to divest risk, his own risk, onto other people is how he is able to use debt smartly.
Say, John Chrysostom, who is this Jabba the Hood guy? That's pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. I think Jason Whitlock would laugh at that too. Let's see, because he's probably heard every fat joke, but that's a new one to me. And then, if you don't call yourself Big Sexy, do you even have a Christian podcast? Good question. Again, the 2000s were a wild time.
I mean, so, apparently you're not supposed to make phallic humor on podcast.
Apparently, that's you're going to get Tom Buck coming after you for that. And all the other church ladies on the internet. Okay, here we go. You guys going to the Trash World Conference? Yeah, I booked my flight for that yesterday. You're flying? Yeah, I'm not driving.
I'm not going, but yeah.
There's a direct flight to Austin. Mm. It finally showed up, a direct flight. I've been looking at flights for months, and it's like, oh, Southwest, about time. We have a competent airline here, because I can't. The only thing cheaper is like Spirit Airline, and it takes 12 hours.
You're going to Florida.
You'll stop wherever or Frontier Airlines, which will have you, multiple layovers in Denver or something.
And hopefully, like no, let's just say, unexected landings due to passenger disruption.
Let me just take one plane and direct flight. Like, those exist, right? And yes, they do exist. And it was actually one of the cheapest flight options. The only thing cheaper was like 13 hours. Like, I value my time. So Yeah, booked the flight yesterday, booked the rental car as well. The only thing I haven't booked is the hotel, but I missed all the discounts for that. So I don't know what cool hotel.
Do Airbnb. That'll do it.
You think that'll be cheaper than?
Yes.
Okay. But can I check in the wee hours of the night? Because otherwise I'm screwed. So the question I'm wrestling with is how cheap can I go on the hotel and I can afford to be that cheap? Like there is a sense that I can't really afford, you know, the cheapest option is just to lie out on the street, right? Can't afford that. For obvious reasons, can't afford that. But what is the cheapest option that I can afford, if you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I'll be there. I'm also going to the Business Owners Networking event as an add-on, so that'll be fun. I'll schmooze a little bit, maybe drum up some business for myself. Let's see. Diverse Jeff Haffey with the Super Chat. Thank you for all the Super Chats, for all the people who sent them, by the way. Diversity is the true strength of any nation. In love, we must work to strengthen our greatest ally. Open Israel's borders immediately.
Yes, we do need to be ironically saying that because, you know, they love it when we open our borders, but, you know, they got to show us theirs too.
Yeah. Well, we've already shown you our open borders. You got to show us yours. What you're saying. Christians, are we ready for the conversation about how a woman with adopted children from Haiti might not be the best fit for a civil magistrate who prioritizes America first?
I mean, again, there is like that Christian evangelicals love adoption angle as well. And Mike Johnson might have
I'm not the same... against the adoption thing, but we are noticing that a lot of these cases lead to wokeness. Mike Johnson, David
I mean, Black, yeah, Mike Johnson like has... I guess adopted black children. I mean, they're not, I don't think they're international, but yeah, I mean, there's some issues with that front. Cause I think one of them has like a criminal record. But I mean, give him some credit. He did technically, you know, America was so back when he kicked out Al Green from the floor of the Congress this week. So.
Oh yeah. Like I was actually, it's like, yeah, you kick out one Democrat and they all just fall silent. So I didn't catch that part. I started watching afterwards, but it's like, wow, they were pretty emasculated as an opposition. But
they had again, I've never seen the speaker threaten the opposing party during a presidential address. So that to me, that was a first. I don't know when's the last time that happened. So Mike Johnson actually shown some testicular fortitude for once. So
yeah, I mean, he's not exactly. He is an order taker, and I think that's the only good thing about him. So that's basically it. So, all right. I think that's all we got for tonight. You should check out, I've not plugged it all evening, my book, Winning Not Winsome, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare, available on the Amazon, that's linked in the description below, and probably other places that I don't feel like listening. So.
Yeah, one thing I'll plug is I did a space the other day with the Nathaniel Green Society. It should be up on my page still. So yeah, we talk about everything from Mark Robinson and Winsome Sears to even like the state of the future state of the American church. So we talk about a good variety of subjects, but yeah, shout out to those guys and Stephen Wolf, ironically. Shills for Nathaniel Green Society, but yeah, they do a good
ironically or unironically.
Oh, unironically, I guess. It's just coincidental.
He lives in North Carolina.
Yep.
Not as coincidental as you think. So no, it is anyway. That's all I gotta say for that tonight. We'll catch you next week. Stay based, Crisis King, and we will catch you then.
O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.